It's been 25 years since the Americans with Disabilities Act became law. This hour, the difference the ADA has made in the past quarter century. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, I'll talk with the chief sponsor of this landmark legislation for the disabled, former Senator Tom Harkin. He'll give us a sense of what life was like before the law.
If you had a disability, that's how you were defined. And you were not given sort of the opportunity to show what else you were capable of doing.
Then in the second half hour, we hear from several disabled people. Has the Americans with Disabilities Act changed your life or the life of a loved one? Join our conversation. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This past weekend marked the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It became law 25 years ago. In this hour, various perspectives on the ADA, a quarter century after its signing by then-President George H.W. Bush. I want to reach out to you, our listeners, this hour. Has the ADA changed your life or the life of one of your family members? Tell us how. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Former Iowa Senator Tom Harkin joins us now. He was the chief sponsor of the American with Disabilities Act. And Senator Harkin, so nice to join us. Have you join us from out of your retirement? I understand that marking 25 years got you back into a very busy mode.
Well, Ben, it's nice to be back with you and with the great Iowa Public Radio. Hey, yeah, listen, I was kind of going along there and just focusing on a few things, and then for the last couple of weeks, my gosh, let's see, I was Grand Marshal of the New York City Disability Pride Parade. We had over 5,000 out. Then the Chicago Disability Pride Parade, and then Saturday the Philadelphia Parade, and then all last week the Department of Justice, the Department of Labor, the Museum here in Washington had an all-day event, and the Smithsonian has had a fantastic exhibit.
In just a moment, I want to have you comment on taking us back to the legislative challenge that the ADA presented to you as a senator and to your colleagues, getting this into law through Congress. But first of all, I'd like to ask you more about your personal family connection with disabilities and how this spurred you to act. I understand your older brother, Frank, is deaf.
Yes, Frank has since passed away. But he was deaf from a very early age and, of course, was taken from his home, sent to the Iowa School for the Deaf in Council Bluffs. And when he got to high school, they told him he could be three things. He could be a shoe cobbler, he could be a baker, or a printer's assistant. And they asked him which one he wanted, and he said he didn't want to be any of those. They said, well, okay, so you're going to be a baker. That was the limits that they put on people simply because they had a disability. So as I grew up, I just saw how he'd kind of been discriminated against and how I think he felt that life had dealt him a bad deal. In fact, he said to me one time, he said, look, he said, there's only one thing I know I can't do. I can't hear. I said, there's probably other things I can't do, but I don't know because I haven't tried them. But there's a lot of other things I can do. And that got me thinking about, my gosh, if I ever got in a place where I could do something to change this dynamic. And fortunate enough, I was elected to the House in 74. I began to work very narrowly, Ben. I got to tell you, my scope was on deafness. And so we worked to set up the National Captioning Institute. I was one of two people to deliver the first decoding box to President Jimmy Carter in the White House. Shortly after that, my nephew, my sister's boy, got injured and became paraplegic. He hadn't gone to college yet, so then he wanted to go to college. And I'll never forget him calling me up and saying, Uncle Tom, I got classes they won't let me take because they're on the second floor. And there's no elevator, and I can't get over curbs. I can't go anywhere in my wheelchair. Well, that really broadened my scope then to think about a lot of other people with disabilities. And then I ran into a young man by the name of Danny Piper from Ankeny, Iowa, a kid with Down syndrome. He was acting in school plays. He was sort of the manager of the football team. Kid really had a lot of talent. And then I began to think about people with intellectual disabilities. So I had quite a growth in this area. And about that time, I became aware of a huge movement in America to include people with disabilities under an umbrella of a Civil Rights Act. Like the Civil Rights Act of 1964 banned discrimination on the basis of race, religion, sex, national origin, but not disability. And so that was what happened. It kind of all came together. Then I got elected to the Senate. I became chair of the Disability Policy Subcommittee and was in a position then to sponsor the legislation and see it through to the signing.
Mm-hmm. Take us back to that legislative battle back to 1980. What were the chief obstacles getting in the way of this legislation? Now people listening, younger people, may be wondering, how is it possible that you could be denied a full life, a career that you wanted to go into because of a disability like deafness or perhaps you were unable to walk?
Well, I know it's hard to believe. I mean, 25 years has changed a lot. But there were just a lot of prejudices, discrimination, some fear a little bit perhaps of people with disabilities. If you had a disability, that's how you were defined. And you were not given sort of the opportunity to show what else you were capable of doing. And then, again, this is a broad civil rights bill, but within that, we put in other things about reasonable accommodations in the workplace, that employers had to make reasonable accommodations for people to work there. Well, I can tell you that in the beginning, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the business groups were all opposed to this, because it was going to be a new mandate on business. They didn't know how to handle it, but we worked with them. And the other thing I can say, Ben, this was a very bipartisan piece of legislation. President George H.W. Bush first mentioned this in his campaign for president in 1988. He actually said that in that campaign he was going to support this Americans with Disabilities Act, and he followed through on it. So we had Republicans like Bob Dole and Orrin Hatch, Steve Bartlett in the House, but we had the weight of the White House behind us. And so we got together with the business community and Bob Dole and other Republicans working with them, and we were able to calm their fears. We made some changes, of course, and in the end, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce supported it. Mm-hmm. But that was sort of the big apprehension at that time was what it was going to do to businesses in America.
Do you see that the partisan atmosphere has changed so much today that, I guess, would this have been possible today, parties getting together on this sort of legislation?
Well, gosh, you know, just earlier, I was at a press conference with Bob Dole, a Republican, Steny Hoyer in the House, who was our House leader on this, a Democrat, Orrin Hatch here in the Senate with me, Steve Bartlett, a conservative Republican from Dallas, Texas, who later became mayor of Dallas. And then we had Boyden Gray from the White House, Dick Thornburgh, our attorney general at that time, strong supporter of this. So it was a tremendous bipartisan. I said in this press conference, I said, you know, in all the time we were working on this, I don't remember one of my colleagues that are here like this saying, no, we can't do this. We can't get this done. I said, everybody had a goal. We wanted to get it done. We disagreed, but we just worked, and we worked year after year after year to bring it together. And that's what legislation does. I mean, it takes time sometimes to make good legislation. I got to tell you, Ben, in the present atmosphere in the Congress, I don't think we would have a prayer of passing the Americans with Disabilities Act today.
Hmm. Senator Tom Harkin is joining me for this part of River to River. We're marking the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Senator Harkin was the chief sponsor of that bill, which became law. If you'd like to join our conversation and tell us how the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, has changed your life or perhaps the life of one of your family members, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook and tell us how the ADA has changed your life or a loved one's life. And you know, Senator Harkin, the younger set listening to our conversation will, you know, not really understand what it was like before the ADA. Can you give us a sense in specific examples of the length and breadth of this act? What do we have in our public areas, in our workplaces now that weren't there and are there because of the ADA?
Well, gosh, Ben, start with the simplest thing of all, and that's curb cuts all over America. Just think, if you used a wheelchair before, how did you ever get from street to street? It's almost impossible. Now, curb cuts, of course, curb cuts also helps parents pushing baby strollers, too, you know. So we found that curb cuts helped everybody. But that's just one. Widened doorways. All new buildings being built in America today are accessible because they have widened doorways or automatic doors that go in and out. We have street lights that talk to you now. So if you're blind, you come up to a street light, you punch the button, and it tells you to wait. And it tells you when the light, when you can walk and when you shouldn't walk. We have video relays so that a deaf person can talk to someone else over a video relay system. We have technologies that allow people with severe cerebral palsy, for example, to actually work at jobs through technology that follows eye movements, for example, so you don't have to use your hands or your body in any way other than your eyes. I keep thinking of all these things that are out there in workplaces. Now, some businesses have done very well in modifying workplaces for a little person. Let's say you have a little person. Well, maybe they just need something higher to stand on. Well, you just make it a little bit higher. Can I tell you one funny story?
Absolutely.
A long time ago, this was right after we passed the ADA and said reasonable accommodations, a young woman who was quite good at taking dictation and writing shorthand and all that, but she had spina bifida when she was born and a shortened body, and so she used a wheelchair. But she was really smart and really fast with her hands and her mind. She applied for a job at a place, a desk job, and they said, well, we'd like to hire you, but because of your chair, you're so high up, you can't get under all these desks, and we can't modify all these desks, and we can't change things around. So she went home and told her dad that. Her dad, being somewhat of a handyman, went down to his shop and cut some blocks of wood about 3 inches high, and he cut four of them. And he said, here, take these down and tell them if we'll just put one under each leg of the desk, you'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just
as simple as that.
Right. Just a simple thing like that.
Now cost has been at issue here, too. How much do you hear about that? Because certainly that was a low-cost fix for this situation. Other curb cuts, other types of technology that help disabled people work, function in society are much more costly. Do we know how much the ADA has cost?
I don't know that I can give you a kind of a hard and fast figure on that. How do you balance quality of life and things like that? But we do have some data on people who are working today in the workplace who have disabilities who 25 years ago would not be working. And so we have a whole generation of young people, Ben, since ADA. They've gone through school, they've gone through college or technical training. They're professionals, they're lawyers. I just met a young woman the other day. She's blind and deaf, and yet she's a lawyer in New York making good money. How does she operate? Well, technology. She has a board with that has Braille that she feels. And if you want to talk to her, you just type on a keyboard, like I'm sending you a message, email, goes right to her. She gets the message, and she can type it back on Braille.
Mm.
And it comes to you as an email or as a visual representation on a screen. Fantastic technology.
How much of this would have happened without an act, or is this almost all these adaptive technologies and so forth due to the act, or would private enterprise demand for it simply have answered it and the call?
Well, I suppose some of it probably would have come about, but the technology people, I remember in the beginning, they saw this as a very small market. And so to develop something like this just was not cost-effective for them to do. So the ADA sort of said, well, you got to do it. We got to start making things adaptable and accessible. And you know what we found and what a lot of these companies found is once they started designing things with what we call universal design, it started helping everybody. Now, I just take that example. I just show you about this young woman who's a lawyer now, went through Harvard Law School. Brilliant mind. So she's in this law firm. Now, that helps her. But what about her colleagues and her fellow lawyers and stuff who rely upon her for advice and consultation?
Mm-hmm.
How could they ever communicate with her? See, so it didn't just help her. It helped that law firm and on and on. I went to a distribution center one time, Walgreens. Walgreens has done a fantastic job of making workplaces accessible. And in this one facility, 40% of the people that worked there were people with disabilities. 40%. With minor modifications that they could make in the workplace to accommodate them. Well, so now these people are working. And as Greg Wasson, the CEO of Walgreens, told me, he said, I don't do this out of the goodness of my heart. He said, this is my most productive distribution center in the United States. He said, I get more output per person hour worked. They never make mistakes. They never get sick. They always show up on time. He said, it's the most loyal workforce I have. And once people with disabilities, intellectual or physical or a combination of both, once they learn that job, he said, man, they just don't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Senator Harkin with us for a few more minutes. Thank you for your reflections, Senator Harkin, the chief sponsor of the American with Disabilities Act that became law 25 years ago. I suppose hand in hand with these technological changes or curb cuts, whatever you want to talk, our awareness, our thinking about this has changed. I recall a conversation I had a few years ago, Senator, with a young man who was born without any legs, and he just said, I don't feel disabled at all. I feel that society treats me that way, but I'm really not that way. And these are the stories you're telling me again and again.
Exactly. That's why I say a person shouldn't be defined by a disability. What are their abilities? And I remember Lowell Weicker. By the way, Senator Lowell Weicker, Republican of Connecticut, was the first sponsor of the Americans with Disabilities Act, not me. He sponsored. I was his first co-sponsor, but then he got defeated for re-election, and then it fell on me to carry the bill forward. Mm. So I want to make that clear. Credit ought to go where credit is due, and Lowell Weicker today remains one of my great friends. But I think what I'm trying to get at here is that what Lowell Weicker once said. He said it's not so much the artificial barriers that society has erected, curbs and doors and stairs and things like that, but the artificial barriers of attitudes, how we think about people with disabilities. And I hope in the last 25 years and looking ahead to the next 25 years, I hope our attitudes will continue to change. So like you say, we don't look at someone that doesn't have legs and say, oh, that person doesn't have legs. You say, hey, what do you do? What's your name? What are your dreams? What do you want to do? What are your goals in life, just like anybody else?
Mm, that's a wonderful sentiment to leave us with. What do you think still needs to be done in the area of disabilities? What can build on these 25 years of accomplishments under the ADA?
Well, that's a good question, and I've thought a lot about this. I've talked a lot about it in the last week or so. Two things. One, we mentioned technology. As we move ahead over the next 25 years, we know that technology is going to be the key to a lot of economic growth. Platforms that are built, whether they're internet or intranet platforms, have to be designed from the beginning for full accessibility for people with disabilities. That just has to be done. The second big thing, and I sound like a broken record on this when I speak, jobs, 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 careers, careers, careers. Today, 60% of adult Americans with disabilities are not in the workforce.
Do we know why?
That is a blot on our national character. It's just a blot. I mean, they want to work, and they can work, but they're not working. And so we have to do a better job. We have to have more businesses follow the lead of Walgreens and Best Buy and a few others, and small businesses have to have affirmative action programs to reach out and bring people in with disabilities and give them employment. That's the one thing that we have fallen way behind on.
Mm-hmm. Do you know specifically why that 60% are not finding work?
Well, sure. First of all, a lot of employers aren't welcoming to them. They don't have affirmative action programs. They go and they get kind of shunted aside. No one's thinking about making reasonable accommodations. And many of these people have been shunted aside for so long, they've kind of given up. They just kind of give up. Well, we need to reach out and start bringing them into the workforce, and especially the young people in the future. We've got to make sure that when these young people get out of school, they're not shoved into sub-minimum wage dead-end jobs, but they get into competitive, integrated employment, just like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, you mentioned at the start of our conversation going to an amazing Smithsonian exhibit on this. What stood out for you there? Is there a part of that exhibit that you were surprised by, even you as the chief sponsor of the ADA bill?
You're talking about the one at the Smithsonian?
Yes, that you went to, that you said you went to as a part of this 25th anniversary.
Just some of the technology there. They had a wheelchair with an articulating arm that could basically pick up a grain of rice and put it in your mouth, and all done hooked up to nerves and muscles in your body. I mean, just some of this technology is fantastic. I saw a young man with severe cerebral palsy. He can't move anything. There's a little light wand that can stick on something, and it shines in his retina, and he looks at a big board like a keyboard, and he can type out, "Hello, how are you? Yes, I'm fine, and by the way, we should design this to be such and such." Imagine that.
Mm.
He can't type a word, but the brain is fantastic. And so here's that technology that allows this person, and allows him to use his abilities, this great brain of his, in a way that was never possible before.
Senator Tom Harkin, it's been a pleasure talking with you again about this as we mark the 25th anniversary of the American with Disabilities Act. Thanks for your recollections and your reflections on the importance of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Thank you, Ben. See you out in Iowa.
And when we come back after a short break, we'll hear from several disabled people and the executive director of Disability Rights Iowa about the difference the ADA has made in the lives across the country and here in Iowa, and what still needs to be done. Has the American with Disabilities Act changed your life or the life of a loved one? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, marking the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act this hour. It became law 25 years ago, and we're looking at the various perspectives on how it's changed our lives, improved the lives of those with disabilities, improved our society as well, a quarter century after its signing by then President George H.W. Bush. I want to reach out to you this half hour. Do you have a disability? Has the ADA changed your life or the life of one of your family members? Tell us how. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us this half hour, two people associated with Disability Rights Iowa. Its executive director, Jane Hudson, is in our Des Moines studio, along with Emmanuel Parker, who is an advocate and investigator for Disability Rights Iowa. Emmanuel and Jane, welcome to our program.
It's nice to be here. It's actually Emmanuel Smith.
Hello.
Emmanuel Smith, forgive me so much.
No problem.
Okay, Emmanuel Smith, welcome to the program. Also with us, joining us by phone, Gary McDermott is a disability rights advocate. Gary joining us. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
Hi. Let's start with you, if we could. You're a disability rights advocate, also a Vietnam veteran. Thank you for your service. You have been in a wheelchair for 43 years. You have an interesting perspective in that your disability predates the Americans with Disabilities Act. So I'd like to have you reflect on some of the things I asked Senator Harkin about. But your firsthand experience will be valuable here. What was it like before the ADA?
Well, you know, since it's been passed 25 years, it's hard to reflect back on prior to that. So many changes have taken place, but it was difficult to find parking or access a curb or even a restroom in a store. And I apologize if I didn't get to hear Senator Harkin.
Okay. Along with these technical things or curb cuts, automatic doors, wider doors for wheelchairs, what have you noticed about changes in people's attitudes towards the wheelchair? Because we have an email from Christopher, one of our listeners, just emailed us and said, not only does the ADA help make places accessible to most, if not all, people, it has helped reduce the stigma of those with disabilities by showing those who have disabilities that they can do things most people would otherwise thought were impossible. Gary?
It certainly has. He's absolutely right. It's changed the perspective people have of people with disabilities. They see that they can get out, they can work, they have money to spend, they have families, such as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And Jane Hudson, talk about some of the changes you've seen. I know along these lines with the stigma, we had before the ADA a greater amount of segregation.
Yes, people were heavily institutionalized before the ADA, and the ADA regulations actually have an integration mandate that says people have the right to live, work, and learn in the community, not isolated, segregated away in institutions. And that really is the big challenge of the American with Disabilities Act right now, to move from institutions into the community.
Mm-hmm. Reflect, if you would, Jane, on some memories you have, snapshots, if you
sure.
will, that you can offer to give perhaps some of our younger listeners an idea of what this was like and what people with disabilities faced before this act came into being. What are the strongest memories, experiences you had?
Sure. In the 1970s, I had an internship in Philadelphia teaching in a school for children who were blind and intellectually impaired as a result of the German measles epidemics. And so they were completely segregated away from other children. And now that school has closed, during that experience, they took me to the Pennhurst State School and Hospital. And I was just shocked. I turned white because I saw babies who had been placed there and they were in cribs and entirely neglected. Eventually, there was a big lawsuit that went all the way to the Supreme Court. People had the constitutional right to have care when they were in custody of institutions. And Pennhurst was closed down, but I was there just before the lawsuit was initiated, and I have been committed ever since to institutions can encourage abuse and neglect of individuals, and it's better for individuals to live in the community where they want to live and learn.
Jane, with your perspective of many decades, it must be simply a joy to come across and encounter and work with people with disabilities, and you think, what might have become of this person if not for the ADA?
Well, absolutely. And we have a lot of individuals with disabilities working in our office with a variety of disabilities. And they're great employees, very creative, have a lot of talents to share. And Emmanuel, who is with me today, is one of them, one of the best writers I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with Emmanuel Smith there. You are an advocate and investigator for Disability mm-hmm. Rights Iowa. Tell us about your investigation work. What do you look for?
Well, previously last year, myself along with many of my colleagues toured the state of Iowa to learn more and kind of go to different places, often termed sheltered workshops mm-hmm. or segregated facilities where people with disabilities receive employment services, which unfortunately often results in subminimum wage and also, you know, can be something as simple as an individual with disability throwing trinkets into a plastic bag for hours on end. And those kind of realities are pretty sombering.
Mm-hmm. So when you find something that would be a violation, what steps can be taken, Emmanuel?
Well, obviously, you know, Disability Rights Iowa is first and foremost a legal service for people with disabilities, and so we thankfully have a wonderful legal team that can explore different legal avenues. But for me, my role would be more towards collaborating with the different stakeholders to try to find a way that we can kind of transform the approach to employment services for people with disabilities, both here in Iowa and nationally.
Mm-hmm. And do you find plenty of work for your investigations, plenty of room for improvement here in Iowa?
Unfortunately, the ADA was an incredibly powerful tool, and it was impressive in its scope and its ambition. But there remain thousands upon thousands of young people with disabilities where the promises of the ADA haven't really fully been made mm-hmm. manifest.
Mm-hmm. You have a disability. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Well, I was born with osteogenesis imperfecta, which I won't test you on later. But it was basically means that I have osteoporosis from birth. So short stature, I use a chair, and you know, an injury can occur much more easily for me.
Mm-hmm. And so, well, when you look at what the ADA has done, and I understand that in your living memory you mm-hmm. you have never lived before the ADA or don't have a memory of that. Mm-hmm. So do you notice do you think about what would have been if you had been born in an earlier era with your disability?
Absolutely. As a young person, it was very important to my mother that she instill a kind of pride in being a member of a disabled community, as well as an awareness of the ADA and its many protections. And so, you know, when I was 10 years old, I actually went to the Capitol to celebrate with people with disabilities for the ADA's 10th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was thankful to hear Senator Harkin speak from a very young age and certainly a personal hero of mine. And, you know, growing up, one of my fondest memories is going to the Iowa State Fair with my mother. And kind of going in the morning and having breakfast and watching the fair kind of come alive around us. That's a very dear memory. And it wouldn't exist without the ADA.
I want to go to our callers in just a moment, Emmanuel, but you used the word pride. Pride at being disabled. Some may find that an interesting choice of words. Explain your pride.
Well, my disability impacts every element of my life. Quite literally, the sound you're hearing right now is a product of my disability, and so I certainly can't run away from it. The alternative is to explore the unique and incredibly valuable elements of a disabled experience and use them as a resource in my day-to-day life and my career, and I think it's made my life richer in mm-hmm. many, many ways.
Can you give us an example of how it's made your life richer that we can understand that better?
Sure. To have a disability is to be constantly improvising because the world is not always catered to my needs. And that can be incredibly satisfying. But more than that, I think it can be a conduit to empathy, a quick way to connect with people, mm-hmm. which some may find difficult. And so having my unique experiences, I think, makes me a better man, a better advocate, and I hope to make use of it as best I can.
Emmanuel Smith is with us, along with Jane Hudson of Disability Rights Iowa, legal services for people with disabilities. Also, Gary McDermott is a disability rights advocate. Let's go to our phones. If you'd like to join us, how the American with Disabilities Act has changed your life or the life of a loved one, tell us about it. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Lakota, Iowa. Way up on our northern border near Minnesota. Allison, hi. Allison, are you there? Allison.
Hello.
Have we got you now?
Yes, here I am.
Okay, great. We hear you. Allison, welcome to the program. What do you have to chip in?
Well, thank you for letting me on your program. I currently work in a group home for a nonprofit organization that serves people with intellectual disabilities and also with physical disabilities as well. And recently, our organization has been working towards getting individuals out of sheltered workplaces where they only work with other people with disabilities and out into the community to work with everybody else. And just seeing the look of joy and the look of pride on people's faces when they can go out and find a job surrounded with other people without disabilities and know that they can hold their own, it's just, it brings a smile to your face, and it really makes you feel better knowing that they have a future and they're not always going to be stuck in an institution for their whole lives.
Mm-hmm. And that we have a society capable of such moves to help disabled people.
Absolutely. Where I work is up by Algona, and Hy-Vee in Algona has really done a fantastic job at welcoming people with intellectual and physical disabilities to come and be employed there. And they've also echoed what so many people in your program have said today, that these people are some of the best workers they've ever had. They're always on time, if not early, and they always show up for work because they are so happy to have the opportunity provided by the American with Disabilities Act to be in a regular job.
Lakota, I was going to say you're in Lakota. Allison in Lakota, thank you for giving us your perspective.
Thank you much.
And let's piggyback on that, Jane Hudson, because it's Senator Harkin's call for improvement in this area was directly to Allison's point there. Employment: 60% of disabled people in America not in employment. What can be done?
Well, it needs to be a realignment of state services and supports to begin with. Right now, Medicaid and state resources and county resources are being used to pay for people to stay in segregated employment settings. And the state needs to realign its resources to have more supported employment and more customized employment, which means supported employment people get assistance in learning jobs and doing the jobs. And customized employment is where you actually break down a job into smaller pieces mm-hmm. and figure out what the company needs and then match that need with the person who can do that job.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not there in Iowa yet. It really needs to be there. There's been lawsuits in Oregon on that, and Department of Justice has been involved in Rhode Island. And
where's that change going to come from? Where is the push needed in your view?
I think it needs to be a grassroots push of people who really want to work and are able to work, and their families as well. And also, it really needs to come from the executive and legislative branches in Iowa to make those changes.
Okay. Jane Hudson with us of Disability Rights Iowa. Let's go back to the phones. Elizabeth calling from Ames. Hello, Elizabeth.
Yes. Hello.
Yes. What is your take on the ADA 25 years into it?
I think it's a wonderful piece of legislation, but the reason I was calling is I have a friend who is in a wheelchair, and she commented to me a couple days ago that where we live in Ames, there were a number of businesses, retail businesses, that she had been at that didn't have automatic door openers. And I wondered if this was maybe because something that was built before ADA, and she said no, this included some recent businesses. So I wondered if this was legal and what she should do about it.
Gary McDermott, you're with us, a disability rights advocate. You've been in a wheelchair for over 40 years. What is the law here?
I'd like to comment on that. Yeah, the power doors are a very nice feature, although they're not required by the ADA. There is a limit on the pounds of pressure to open a door. I believe it's 8 pounds on an external door and 5 pounds on an internal door. So it's a shame that they don't have those power doors on everything, although they're not required.
Mm-hmm. Gary, this might be a time for you to talk about the changes you've been working hard on to make gas pumps more accessible. How did that start?
Well, it started out, I was doing some legislative work in Des Moines, and I tried driving home and was low on fuel. Could not get any fuel assistance. And the ADA states that if they have two or more employees, they would come out and pump your fuel for you. However, they don't explain how you get the attention of that clerk inside the store.
So you were in your car at the gas station trying to flag somebody down, and there was nobody seeing you.
Right. They suggest that you honk or flash your lights, and we know that doesn't work, and it's getting worse all the time. So I tried that at four different stations and did not get through to anybody. So I did finally find a station in Iowa City that had a call button system. We then filed a class action lawsuit, and after a year and a half, we settled with Come and Go out of West Des Moines, and they were required to bring into compliance their 411 stores in 12 different states.
How did they come into compliance?
They have over time, they have to bring into compliance their pumps, their ramps, their parking, their bathrooms, their countertops, and their aisles in their stores.
Mm-hmm. Early on, I think this was a bigger point than has been in the more recent time. But Gary, what do you say to those who, be they business owners or whatever, chambers of commerce, who have concerns about cost complying with the ADA, cost to government, to business, in order to be compliant?
Well, I think if they would do it while they're building the structure, they would find that it's not that expensive to go forward and make these changes to make it more accessible. After the fact, yes, it's going to be a little more costly, but it's a benefit for everyone. I think studies show that at some time or another, every family would have someone with a disability in their family. So it's going to benefit a great number of people.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend a few minutes talking about where we go from here, 25 years after the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, became law. Let's start with you, Gary, since we're with you. What are the places you'd like to see improved?
Well, I think the number one place we need to improve on is the gas pumps. Senator Rita Hart and I are working on legislation right now to help some of the other stations around the state become compliant and make these gas pumps accessible to drivers. There are 16 million drivers with disabilities. So that's one place we can start, and that will lead to people getting jobs, visiting their family, just participating in life in general.
Mm-hmm. What about handicapped spaces and the use of the placards? Is that a good system?
Yes, I think it needs a little work. There's way too many people out there that are abusing them. I know when I was over in the Illinois state, you could buy a placard at a garage sale.
A disabled placard for your car?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I imagine the penalty for using that without being disabled would be significant or not?
Yes, I believe it is. I'm not sure exactly what it is over in Illinois now. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the parking needs to be brought into compliance at a lot of different places. There's a lot of work to be done.
Okay. Jane Hudson, what would be on your list as far as improvements?
Well, Medicaid, you know, Iowa is moving to managed care on January 1st, 2016. And Medicaid's very institutionally biased, and it's really cheaper to live in the community than in an institution. And so there needs to be more ability to get waivers. There's a lot of people on waiting lists for waivers, which means you can live in the community and not in that nursing facility or intermediate care facility. So I think that's the biggest one. The other things for accessibility, we've done a survey of restaurants in the East Village, gave awards to five that were accessible, but there's a lot still not accessible. And the Iowa State Fair is actually being very proactive and becoming more accessible due to some of our work with mm-hmm. them. So it's great.
Is Iowa in the middle of the pack, at the forefront, or lagging behind when it comes to disability rights and accommodating disabled folks?
Iowa is a heavily institutionalized state, lots of nursing facilities, and all of us know we'd rather live at home with supports and services than go into a nursing facility. And that's one big thing Iowa really needs to change.
Okay. Emmanuel Smith, let's hear from you the final words as you look to possible improvements. What would you like to see?
Well, of course, I grew up with the protections of the ADA in place. And I was raised in a household that really, like I mentioned, you know, encouraged me to take pride in my disability. But there remains, I think, a really toxic cultural element of the reduced expectations surrounding people with disabilities. And an overwhelming, I think, feeling towards impulse to protect people with disabilities from mm-hmm. everyday life.
Well-meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the ultimate goal ought to be showing disability as a natural and important expression of the human experience.
It sounds like your parents were instrumental in doing that and not letting you have a lower bar than others were without disabilities.
Right, and I think that our community is a reflection of our culture in many ways. And so if we can adjust the way that we discuss disability, especially around young people, I think there'll be a greater expectation that businesses are more accessible.
Okay, Emmanuel Smith, I'm afraid we have to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Emmanuel Smith with Disability Rights Iowa, also Jane Hudson, thank you. And Gary McDermott, thank you very much for your input this hour.
Thank you.
I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.